Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast, Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found on the blog, Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's always freely available on iTunes. Today, I have the opportunity and pleasure to meet with another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I'd like to say hey to Aisha. Hey, how are you doing today?
Hello, Pam. I'm doing good. And how about yourself?
Good, good. I'm in upstate New York, and it's finally getting nice and cool here. And I really enjoy the fall crisp air. What's it like where you are?
Here is fine. It's raining today. I think Hurricane Sally may be making its way up the East Coast. I'm in Columbia, South Carolina. So the weather here is pretty rainy right now. I think it's going to rain a lot tomorrow as well. But the temperatures are getting cooler. I think it's about 70 or low 80s when we could be 90, 100, but
okay.
The fall is hitting us. It'll be here next week. And
yeah,
you know, excited for the cooler temperatures, but ready for the rain to go away.
Yeah. I'm sure. So you told us where you're from, but could you formally introduce yourself? Who you are? And what keeps you busy?
All right. My name is Aisha Haynes, and I'm originally from a town called Orangeburg, South Carolina. It's about 45 minutes from Columbia, South Carolina, which is where I currently live. I work at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, where I'm the assistant director of the Center for Teaching Excellence. And I've been with the university really since school. I got my undergraduate there, my master's there, my doctorate there as well. I've kind of stayed there mostly. I worked somewhere else for a little while, but mainly with the university. And I also teach. I teach a computer applications and hospitality retail sport management course. I teach all online. Mm-hmm. So I teach that course. And I'm also a graduate associate faculty in our College of Education and the Curriculum and Instructions Emphasis and Curriculum Studies program. So that's what I do. It keeps me really busy. Yeah, I'm a part of various organizations that keep me busy as well. And when I'm not working, I like to travel. I like to eat.
Oh, I see your posts on Facebook all the time, and I'm always so envious. Like, how can that woman eat the way she does and not be 500 pounds?
Well, I'm starting to cut down now. I'm on WW, you know, Weight Watchers. So
wow.
I'm starting to track a little bit now. I hadn't been tracking for a while, but I'm tracking a little bit now because my clothes getting a little tight. but you know, I kind of know what I need to do. So I'm kind of maybe at the end of the month. My birthday is coming up in a few weeks, and so after that, then I really get on it and try to lose some additional weight. But I really love eating, trying new restaurants, especially when I'm traveling, trying new restaurants. I also like adventurous things like whitewater rafting and kayaking and things like that. And yeah, I just like to hang out. I like to attend sporting events, which I'm not gonna do this year, but football, the University of South Carolina, go Gamecock. That women's basketball, I enjoy that as well. That keeps me busy, and spending time with friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps me busy. That keeps me busy as well.
Wow, you are a busy, active person. So I'm really glad that you took some time to chat with us today. So I'm interested. You said that you've spent most of your career at the same university, and that you are you are an assistant director to the Center of Excellence. Did I hear that right?
Yes, the assistant director at the Center for Teaching Excellence. We provide professional development opportunities for all who teach. So I manage the instructional design team. So right now I'm managing 5 people on the team. So we assist faculty with designing online, face-to-face, hybrid, blended courses. So that's my main role there. And I also, even though I manage the team, I also work with faculty, myself. So that's my main role at the university. But as I mentioned earlier, I kind of do quite a few things.
Yeah.
Busy.
What got you interested in your particular field?
Ah, that's an interesting story. So I got my undergrad in technology, and then I ended up getting my master's in educational technology, where we learned about instructional design and learned about educational technologies. And so that's when I got interested. I took a graduate course as an undergraduate student in the ed tech, educational technology, we call it ed tech program. So I guess that's where I started becoming interested in the field. Right after I graduated with my undergrad, I ended up going to work back in my hometown in Orangeburg, and I was fixing computers, and that was fine. I wanted to do something a little bit different. So that's when I enrolled into the graduate program in ed tech at the University of South Carolina in Columbia. And it was then that I got interested in I became more interested in educational technology, more interested in instructional design. One of my professors in the program, she recommended me for a position at the university as an instructional technology manager. I was able to get that position and then kind of been moving up from there. Mm-hmm. And that was at the Dollar Moore School of Business. So I went from the School of Business to the CTE, and I've been with the CTE for, I guess, 9 to 10 years now. Wow. So I think it started with that one class as an undergraduate where I was able to take that graduate class.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of piqued and held your interest.
Yes. Yep. It held my interest.
Yeah. So where does stuttering interface in all this? Has it impacted, you know, like your career choices and socialization with other people? Tell us about it.
Yeah, I wonder. I remember when I was younger wanting to be a sports broadcaster. I don't know where that kind of shifted from that. Then I wanted to be like, you know, work on computers, and then kind of shifted from that. So I don't think stuttering had an impact on my career choices. I was a person who covertly stuttered most of my life, all through college, all through my graduate program, my master's program. I don't think that stuttering assisted me in my career choice thinking. But it has been quite interesting. I like many people at the institution probably don't know I stutter. Well, they probably do now, because I've been stuttering probably over the last 5 years, a little more, probably like since 2016 or so. I've been stuttering really well since then. But since then, I've been featured on, maybe before, maybe 2014. I've been featured on like the front page of the university's paper that goes out to all faculty and staff. It was called Nothing to Hide. But that was like my coming out story to university, being a person who stutters. And many people contacted me about that, saying they did not know that I am a person who stutters. And so more people know now. I've done workshops with Charlie Adams, who's a faculty member at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, and a SLP as well. We've done presentations together on campus at the Center for Teaching Excellence. I've been able to share my experiences that way.
Wonderful.
And I advertise now before any, I do quite a few speaking. I do quite a few presentations and speaking engagements on campus, and I share there. I advertise before I even speak that I'm a person who stutters. And so at first, I hid that I was a person who stutters for a very long time, but lately, over the last, I guess, maybe 6 years or so, I've been sharing more information about that part of me with the university community. And everyone's been very receptive, about that. I know that I won the University Social Justice Award this year, earlier this year. And a piece of my presentation that I did, a piece of my video that I had to create for, that I had to create that was shown to the whole entire audience, was on stuttering and my involvement with the National Stuttering Association. I've also, I was the interim director of the center for a while, so I was doing a little bit more speaking engagements in front of the president, the provost, and individual, and new faculty, and I advertised there that I was a person who stutters, and one person came up to me and said that she admired me, and that her daughter is a person who stutters, and she felt great being able to go back to her daughter to tell her that she met a person who stutters that's doing good things. So yeah. Even though, like as I mentioned, it was even though at first, you know, I wasn't really talking about being a person who stutters or even letting people know that I'm a person who stutters, I've been disclosing that a lot more in my job and in my career.
Mm-hmm. So what was the tipping point? Like, what made you decide I'm not going to hide it anymore?
I think it was I couldn't hide it anymore. But I don't know what happened. I did this. I was a keynote speaker at the College of Charleston on University Design for Learning, making sure that learning is accessible to all students, that we design courses that can be useful for all students. And I don't know, it was like from there, I started stuttering a lot more. I don't know what was going on around that time, but I really couldn't hide like I used to. And so I think it was then that I was like, well, I can't hide it anymore. Might as well go ahead and tell the world. And I've gotten great strategies from some other individuals who stutter, from the support group in Columbia, South Carolina, from the national conferences about ways to disclose. And I remember even posting something on Facebook, you know, say, yeah, I got this presentation coming up. I need a nice, clever line to disclose I'm a person who stutters. And some of the people giving me some pointers there. So I think the tipping point was really not being able to hide it anymore like I was before.
Yeah, you know, that's really funny because that kind of same thing happened with me as well. I too hid my stuttering for, oh gosh, way too long, like upwards of 35 years. And I began to not be able to do it anymore. The tricks didn't work. You know, open stuttering would slip out. And it just became too much of an effort in my head to constantly be, you know, thinking about switching words and stuff. So I kind of had the same thing. Like I just reached a pivot in my life that, you know, I had an aha moment in my life, but it was also tied to, I just didn't want to do it anymore. I felt so, you know, fake. And I want it to be true to myself. So does any of that resonate with you as well?
Yes, most definitely. I can say that now being open with it, I mean, it's been so much better. Mm-hmm. It's opened up many doors for me. It calms me down. Like when I advertise before presentation, you know, the anxiety level goes down. I'm not hiding. If I stutter, it's fine. You know, just bear with me. I'm a person who stutters. So I can definitely resonate with a lot of the information that you talked about just now.
Mm. And what was it like for you growing up? Were you overtly stuttering, or did you find yourself like trying to hide it, like from a very young age?
I have no recollection of stuttering until high school.
Wow.
Yeah, no. And I was working at Ryan's Family Steakhouse, and I was taking people orders, and I just realized that I was having this fluency on vowel sounds. At first, it was just vowel sounds, and you know, of course, my name starts with a vowel sound. So I always thank my mom and dad and my dad for naming me, you know, for giving me a name that starts with the vowel sound that I was having disfluencies with. So I have no recollection of growing up with a stutter. It started in high school, and then I don't remember stuttering in undergrad.
Wow.
I remember stuttering first when I went back to work in Orangeburg. This was probably maybe a year or two after I graduated, and then when I had to go out and meet people, and that's when I remember being disfluent again. But the thing was that the people in the district knew who I was. I didn't really have to say my name, so I just avoided saying it. And then when I went to work at the university, I had to go meet with faculty, and then that's when I started stuttering more. That's when the first time someone had ever heard me stutter was really my second job that I've had, and that was post master's degree.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's very interesting. I have no recollection of stuttering as a kid.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't have speech therapy then as a kid?
No. At first, I didn't start speech therapy until I started working in that job at the Dollimore School of Business.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was so distraught that I stuttered in front of somebody, and then I told one of my best friends, and then she got me connected with Charlie Adams.
Hmm. So you went to therapy because of how you felt about having somebody else see or hear you stuttering?
Yeah, I think so. I think I just wanted to get some help. I had never stuttered in front of someone, and then it happened, and then. You know, I felt really down about it. So I just wanted to get some help with that. But I do remember using various techniques in therapy. But I think the most important thing was the emotional side of it, the iceberg analogy that we use.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the most beneficial part of therapy for me. Mm-hmm. Was to actually let people hear that I stutter. I had to go like to this mall and stutter on purpose, and it was just frightening. But to see that they didn't care, they were patient,
mm-hmm.
and there to listen. I think that was really a turning point and make me feel a little bit better about it.
Yeah. I remember that. I remember that actually from my first or second National Stuttering Association conference, where I went to a workshop on advertising, and people were talking about what they were going to do, blah blah, and then the next thing I know, we're walking together outside of the hotel, and I'm told, well you need to go and do voluntary stuttering with strangers in the street. I'm like, what? I can't do that. And so I didn't do it that time, but I think the next year when I came back, I went ahead and, you know, tried it and saw the value in desensitizing. But at first I just couldn't understand why anybody would want to put themselves in that position. But when you look at it, it does make sense. It's like you only get over a fear of water if you get in the water.
That's true. So getting over that fear was very important. And I can say that therapy helped with that, as well as attending the support group meetings and attending the conferences.
So how did you find the NSA, the local chapter meeting?
Yeah, I found that through Charlie Adams when I went to therapy. When I went to therapy, he said that you thought group would be good for me. You know, we had the therapy part of it, but it's important too to meet other people who stutter.
Mm-hmm.
So therapy and the support group was kind of hand in hand. I did both at the same time.
Oh.
I did therapy for like a semester, but I'm still a part of the support group and now one of the co-chapter leaders of the Columbia, South Carolina chapter.
Great. And when was your first national conference?
First national conference was, I believe, 2006. It was in Parsippany, New Jersey. So I believe it was now.
No, my first one was in 2006, and it was in Long Beach, California.
Okay.
I think Parsippany was 2008.
Okay, maybe so then. Yes, maybe 2008 then.
Because it was in a horrible place, wasn't it? I mean, it was like, what is this place? Nothing to do. There's nowhere to go.
I remember taking the trip to New York City, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think there was like a baseball trip game. I mean, a baseball game trip. And I don't think I went on that, but I remember people coming back and like they were gone for hours because they got stuck in the Lincoln Tunnel or something. The bus did.
Wow.
Yeah.
The first one was Parsippany in 2008 or so. And I've been going since then.
Wow. So you said that you've done some workshops and stuff there. When did you realize that you wanted to contribute in that way to give workshops and presentations?
Works on the presentations at work just in general?
At the conference?
Yeah. Oh yes, I've done at the NSA conference. I've done one of the ones with you that may have been my first one. It was like a monologue kind of thing.
Yeah.
I did that, and then Charlie and I did one on stuttering in the classrooms, considerations for faculty and students.
Oh.
We did that one together. So those are the only two that I've done at the conference. I've participated in a few as like some other roles, but actual presenting was with Charlie that time, and then the monologue. I think it's called Stutter and Monologue.
That was a lot of fun, and I think for many of the people that participated in it, it was like the first time they actually got up and did a presentation of creative expression about their stuttering. So. Yeah, that was really cool to do that and have you part of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So what would you say has been like the most important part of your journey with stuttering?
The most important part of my journey with stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
I would really going to the therapy, going to the conferences, and knowing that it's okay to be a person who stutters.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most important part in my journey is hearing other people speak and learning from them that it's okay to be a person who stutters in the various avenues with the support group, the therapy, the conferences.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say those are the most important part of the journey.
Yeah, and if you had to offer advice to like a younger woman, maybe even a teen girl who was just starting out on her journey, what advice or insight might you offer to someone just starting out with maybe being open about stuttering?
I would say that the journey is not easy, but it's definitely worth it. And I know that from experiences. It's still not easy for me today, you know, but I know that it's okay to stutter. So I would, you know, like to tell any individuals who are younger starting out that it is okay to be a person who stutters. Don't let stuttering define you, that it's just a part of you, and it's a unique part of you that can really if you embrace it, it can really be a part of you that can help you to grow and contribute to society. So, you know, I'm a person who stutters, but you know, I don't let that hold me back from doing anything. It may have held me back before. I've done a lot of things in the past. Like give fake names or walk out of like my sorority sister's bridal shower because I didn't want to be a person, you know, I didn't want to let people know that I'm a person who stutters. But I think that we can really embrace it and let that part of us shine and don't let us hold us back from anything that we want to do in our life.
So I definitely have to pick up on that comment where you said you've given a fake name. tell me about that.
Yeah, I think I was out on the town with some friends and then a guy came up and said, hey, you know, what's your name? And I just said, Sean. It was just so much easier just to say. It's like part of my middle name, mm-hmm. you know, so that was easy to say. And then I was at, I think, Walmart for like Black Friday. and someone came up to me, I was in my hometown, and said, what's your name? And I said, Sean. And she said, I thought you was somebody else. You look like so-and-so's sister. And I was like, those are the two times I remember, you know, giving a fake name, but I haven't done that. And that's really a really long time ago, probably about, I don't know, 15 years ago or so.
Yeah.
I listen to that. Don't do that. That's not a good thing to do, but
exactly.
It was a good idea back in the day to help me through.
Yeah. So did any of your friends or family find out that you had done that, had given a fake name, and you know, what was their reaction?
No, I never told them that. Oh, that I had ever given okay. that I had ever given a fake name. My mom was with me one time though. I was at the mall and one of my sorority sisters came up to me. I had my sorority colors on and then she asked me what my name was and I had disfluency saying my name, and my mom, she said something like, you don't remember your name or something like that. So I felt really, really bad. I mean, she didn't know I stuttered or anything. Mm-hmm. So I gave my real name with my mom there and she thought I forgot it.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah,
but now she knows I'm a person who stutters. She's read the articles. She's watched various videos that I've done. I haven't really stuttered around her probably since then. Mm-hmm. Some days I stutter more than others. It all depends on situations, I guess.
Right. But yeah, stuttering is definitely very, 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 very variable and situational. Yes. I tend to not stutter as much when I am doing something with a group, like when I'm presenting to an audience, because I will project my voice more, and for some reason, projection smooths out my fluency a bit. But you know, when I'm talking one-on-one or on the phone, I definitely tend to stutter more. But it doesn't bother me now. But it did when I was trying to hide it. So you said your mom is, you know, she's aware. Has your family been supportive, you know, with you coming out, you know, since you said you did like a few years ago?
I would say so. They really haven't heard me stutter. They, you know, now if they were to come to some of my presentations and things like that, then they would definitely hear it. I know I stuttered a whole lot when Charlie and I were on a panel. We had John Gomez come for When I Stutter.
Oh,
University of South Carolina. And I was on the panel and I couldn't get one word out. So they would have, you know, so there are opportunities for them if they were there to see me, to hear me stutter.
Mm-hmm.
But I really haven't stuttered around my family. I don't know, maybe it's my comfort level around them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but I would say that they are supportive, but they haven't really experienced it.
Right. Wow.
Maybe one day they will.
Right. I've heard from people that share that like they tend to find themselves stuttering more with family, like on big holidays and stuff, like when, you know, like when a large group of family gets together, especially people like that you might not see as often as like your you know, not your extended family, but your immediate family. So like I've heard people say that, like when they, you know, when they get together, like they'll stutter, and people will be like, what's going on, or what are you doing, or are you okay, and that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, stuttering has been very scarce around the family, so I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Well, I guess that's a good thing. And then when you do stutter around the family, it definitely sounds like you're much more okay with that.
Probably, you know, 15 years ago, I'd be terrified to do it. But now they all know. I mean, they've read some of this stuff, and they've heard me talk about it, and they know I go to the conference. Like before, I just told them I'm going to a speech conference. It took me a little while to say I'm going to a stuttering conference.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been a little more open with that. And so they know that I stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they've heard it too much. But yeah. If they watch, I know there's some of my presentations on YouTube, especially the one I did with Charlie on campus. There's quite a bit of stuttering in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were to Google me, and they might find it.
I think I might Google you and find that and attach it to the show notes with today's episode.
Yeah, I know that the center has a YouTube channel, and there's there's the presentation that Charlie and I did. So it's the Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of South Carolina. So there's the presentation that Charlie and I did there. There's also, I think, a video of me. I think I won another award. And I think I did some stuttering in that video as well. But yeah.
Well, I will definitely Google you and, and find out your secrets. Well, listen, Aisha, thank you so much for being a guest today. You know, your story is going to inspire a lot of people because you have achieved so much success in all areas of your life, and you're showing that stuttering does not have to hold you back. So, you know, I appreciate you sharing parts of your story.
No, you're welcome. And I know that I've shared, you know, a person who stutters in job interviews, and they're like, oh, you know, that's good. You know, they didn't, you know, it was just another thing that I just shared with them. And I think one of the vice provosts that I had an interview with, or, you know, spoke with her about a position, mentioned that she had already known that someone else had already told her, and that,
oh,
you know, it's good. You know, the dollar's good. So having a stutter hasn't held me back from any kind of job or doing anything. I just now know that, you know, just go ahead and disclose it and go on about my business. It's a unique part of me, and it's a special part of me. And it's really, I think it's really been a benefit to me over the last 10 years, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years or so, to just disclose that. I think that it has grown my profile, and share that, you know, that we all have something that we're all diverse, but we don't let, you know, some of the challenges that we have hold us back.
Yeah, for sure. And you have not let challenges hold you back. And I know people are going to be inspired by your story. So thanks again.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.